Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 51st episode of the Brief Nerdy Podcast. I am your host. My name is Ryan. Joining once again is my good friend, and also coincidentally happens to be my co-host tonight, Trent.
Hello. How's it going?
I am doing well. Thank you. We have a great show for you all tonight. It's just us two, no TJ or other third guest here tonight, but we have some good topics of discussion. We are going to talk about the Red Rebels mid-season finale a bit more in-depth than we did last time. We're going to talk a bit about the cost of the game, cost of games versus the number of hours we play. And then we're also going to talk about the Disney talks to buying Fox. But first, our round robin. We're going to do our favorite forgotten gem. Not literal gems.
So I was wondering real quick, do we want to do Rebels at the end so we can talk spoilers?
Yes. We will talk about Rebels at the end so we can talk spoilers. So,
woo-hoo. Sorry. Continue on with the round robin. I apologize.
Okay. So we're not talking actual gems. We're talking nerd gems, such as any games, movies, TV shows, anything like that, that we feel didn't get enough attention or just something along those lines. Do you want to go first, Trent?
Dang it. I was going to go with Amethyst, and now I don't know what to... No, I'm just kidding. So my forgotten gem is just probably one of my first favorite RPGs of all time, which was Dragon Warrior 3. I've talked about it a lot in the past, so maybe it's not as forgotten for anyone who listens to this. I feel like the Dragon Warrior Dragon Quest series is kind of out a lot as compared to the early Final Fantasy games, and I feel like the early Dragon Warrior, Dragon Quest games were actually better than the early Final Fantasy games, in my opinion.
I agree. Final Fantasy didn't get good until 6, in my opinion.
I agree. Okay, cool.
But I loved... I only played the first two Dragon Warrior games, though. Never played 3.
Nah. 3 was awesome. 3, you finally got... Like, you were the hero no matter what, which is its own class, but you could recruit a group of other heroes to up to 3 party members to go with you. Then you could choose which class they were and name them and stuff, and so it added like the first like class based roles and stuff, which was super fun.
Very cool. Yeah. I'm gonna have to go with a game as well. Have you ever heard of No One Lives Forever? Abbreviated as NOLF. It is a first person shooter that came out in 2000 and had a sequel come out just a couple years later called No One Lives Forever 2. It was my very first PC shooter. Like, I just got a laptop around that time for the first time I was able to play some semblance of video games. I played KOTOR on it first, not on Xbox, but I played KOTOR on it. But then my friend let me borrow this game called No One Lives Forever. It's, if you say it's a cross between James Bond and Austin Powers, people look at you funny because Austin Powers is a spoof of James Bond, but it's a spy game that takes itself serious enough to have some serious tone to it, but it's also definitely a comedy and has a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor in it. You play as the first female British spy, or just not really British, but this part of the spy organization. She's the first female version of the spy, and so there's a lot of commentary on, you know, and a lot of misogyny going on, you know, with her, and she proves herself to be awesome and stuff like that. She's just a really, really, really cool character, and it was just really, really well done. There was stealth mechanics and kind of like the old Deus Ex games. There's a variety of different ways you could take on the mission. You could go in guns blazing, you could do stealth, you could use gadgets, very like Q007-esque gadgets to get through the levels and everything like that. You could listen in on guard talk, and they talk about philosophy and all sorts of crazy fun stuff. Just a very, very good game, and it was only released on PC. Both of them were only released on PC back in actually, I think there was a PS2 version of one of them, but it was just a port. But very, very good game. It was made by Monolith Studios, the same people who made the two recent Shadow of Mordor games. It was just a really, really good game.
Back before they turned into loot box whores, then?
Yeah. but unfortunately, we'll never get a sequel to it because the rights are tied up between like 4 or 5 different studios at this point. Yikes. Between like Warner Brothers, Universal, Activision, and a couple others just based on who owned who at the time. And so it's unfortunately going to be a game that kind of stays dead forever. But, you know, one was great and two was absolutely a masterpiece. So they're even not available on Steam. The only way to play them is to have an actual copy of the disc or to pirate it.
Wow.
So it's a good game.
That sounds cool, though.
Yeah, you should look for it at your local Goodwill, I guess. Because that's the only place you'll find it.
Find somehow.
Yeah.
Some way.
But yeah, someone mentioned it on Reddit this week, and it took me down a short little like 45-minute romp of just like watching YouTube videos and parts from the game, and just me like, that was a fun game. But anyway,
maybe I'll just watch YouTube.
There you go. So Trent, what you been playing?
I have been playing not a lot of anything because the last week I was at home without my computer and an ancient laptop that can barely run Windows 10. it probably shouldn't even be able to, but it does. That's right. So I've basically just been playing some mobile games lately. Is called Hustle Castle, which sounds really stupid, but it's actually really fun. If you've heard of Fallout Shelter for the mobile game, it's the exact same like type of game. Like they basically stole the basic idea and design, but then turned it into a fantasy genre and added RPG elements, which are pretty fun in my
opinion. Very cool.
Like you can level up like fighters and archers, and eventually I'm assuming I can get wizards because they showed them off at the beginning of the game. And so you build this party up and you send them forth from your castle to like follow your queen who's been in the princess you're supposed to marry who's been abducted by the evil sorcerer, blah blah blah. So you know, very silly, very cartoony, but pretty fun and good time passing game. So
yeah, the perfect opportunity to finish Mario on your Switch, and you didn't do it.
You know, I actually didn't have a lot of time to do that.
I'm just kidding with you.
Well, for some reason, like I pulled it out for a minute on the plane, but for some reason, like I have perfectly trained my body to just get super sleepy on planes.
So, not a bad skill.
The minute I sit down in my the minute I sit down in my perfect window seat, like I am like. And then I sleep until the plane lands. Like I usually don't even wake up to get the drink service.
nice.
So I listened to like half an hour of my audiobook total, even though I was on the plane for like 3-4 hours. And then when I was at home, I was either packing or doing family stuff or interviews and just all this kind of craziness. So
yeah, it happens.
But I will finish it.
I know you.
I finished The Lost World the other day, so.
That's not the music. It was me attempting to do the music, but it was bad. for me, I played a lot of things over this week, but the only one I'm really going to talk about is Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus. I started it and finished it this week. No surprise, it's about 10-12 hours long. It's a shooter campaign. I'll have to admit, like I was kind of struggling with the beginning because recently TJ told me that he was kind of struggling with the first Wolfenstein reboot game, The New Order. And I was like, oh man, like that sucks. That's really happening. But then like probably for the first 2 or 3 hours of Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, I was feeling like the exact same thing. I was like, this isn't really good. Like what what did I really love about the first game? This is so just like bland and generic right now. But I don't want to have any spoilers, but at some point in the game, just things kind of change in the game, and then the game just gets like super fun from that point on. And the story is really, really good, and who would have thought by the end of 2017, I would say the phrase, BJ Blazkowicz has probably some of the best character development I've seen in gaming this year. It's true. It's absolutely 100% true. Like, I mean, it's not like super, super in-depth, like one of the most in-depth characters in game I've ever seen. But, when you're talking about a game where you shoot, 1960s neo-Nazis as a character named BJ Blazkowicz, and he has a surprising amount of depth to him, then it's just, it's a whole it's a strange phrase on its own, but I ended up really enjoying the game. I give it maybe a solid 8 or so.
Nice.
Yeah, definitely worth, you know, just a couple sit down sessions and playing through and, you know, beating the campaign. It's basically the middle chapter of a trilogy, and so it kind of suffers a little bit of middle chapter of a trilogy-ness, to where it kind of just starts right where the last one left off and doesn't really have a definitive ending, more kind of as a setup for the real show than the final act. But it was still an enjoyable
experience.
A better
ending than Battlefront, though?
Yeah. we'll see, though. Did you know Battlefront's DLC comes out the day before Last Jedi?
I did know that, because it's the Last Jedi Force Awakens content, right?
Yeah, I didn't realize it was just the day before, or rather 2 days before, but we're seeing it on a Thursday night, so technically the day before that. But yeah, nice. So that'd be nice. I'll definitely play through the rest of the missions there and in preparation for Last Jedi, so very excited about that. As far as stuff I'm watching, the only thing I think noteworthy to talk about is I started the Arrowverse. I'm about 2 or 3 episodes into each show right now, and I don't like any of them.
Oh, no. Not at all?
Not really.
Oh, sad.
I would definitely say they're all, if there's a scale, you know, maybe some of them are like far, far deep in the red end of this like temperature scale, and then some of them are in the middle, but still pointed in more towards the red side, I would say.
And I talked them all up for you this season. I feel bad.
No, it's okay. I'm probably, ironically, again, liking Arrow the best out of them. Though it still struggles with the things that I struggle with it. The rest of them just haven't quite hit a point where I'm even interested or caring what they're doing at the moment. So,
yeah, I feel like Arrow is having a real identity problem right now. I don't know how far in you are.
Just 2 for Arrow.
But yeah, they don't know what to do with all the characters they've amassed. They had to have a team, and like their team changed so drastically, and now
not just any team, like a team of ethnically and sexual oriented diverse group of male and female characters. You look like a cast of a CW show.
Well, the funny thing is that's like mostly just crap. What's his name? I should know. He's one of my favorite characters, although I hate his superhero.
Terrific.
Alter ego. Yeah. Curtis?
Yeah,
I think Curtis. So, I don't know. There's things that I'm really liking about it. I like that it's kind of a little bit less like superpowered evil guy is the bad guy, and there's just a lot of different threats they've built up and can play with. But yeah, I think it's struggling to figure out what to do with all of its characters that they've thrust into the mix, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we should do things with these people."
They should just start killing them.
Story.
Kill them. Just kill them. Starting with Iris and Flash.
Like
for real.
I'm okay with Iris dying.
If Trent's on the Iris dying train, you know it's bad.
Pretty much anyone in Arrow dying, really. Just to change things up a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe not bring back their doppelganger this time.
But, not just one doppelganger. We technically have like 2 Black Canaries at this point. So even though one's Black Siren with my air quotes there. Right. But
from Earth 2.
Yeah.
But they're both named Dinah. It's whatever.
Yeah. So what are you watching?
It's like our fourth Black Canary at this point, right?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Anyway, I haven't really been watching anything new. Like I've been kept up to date a week and a half behind on the CW stuff at the moment, but I'm catching up on that here soon. But I thought I would talk a little bit about the book that I'm listening to right now, which is called Oathbringer. And it's Brandon Sanderson's newest in his epic fantasy series called The Stormlight Archives. And for any of you fantasy buffs out there, this is the author that did like Mistborn and Elantris and finished the Wheel of Time series. So it's his third book. It's super long. It's like 55-hour audiobook. I think I have like 30
Whoa.
something left. So I'm in part two right now, and I'm loving every chapter for the most part. There's been a couple of meh chapters, but they were useful, like world building stuff. So, but so much good stuff going on, and I'm just really, really loving it. So if you're looking for a book series to read, there are three of those that are all about that length. So you could spend a while on those three books alone. Not to mention everything else that he has written is amazing, and he's very prolific. So check him out. Oh,
I have one
interesting
question.
note. Oathbringer, sorry, real quick before I forget. Oathbringer was the most pre-ordered book ever on Audible, and it almost crashed Audible's servers the morning it came out.
Oh, wow. Well, good for them.
Yeah, what was your question?
Why are you reading another book when you have more homework to do, as far as Star Wars books are concerned?
I mean, I just the truth is that I like the oath the rate the Stormlight Archives more than I've been liking the Star Wars books lately.
No doubt in my mind.
And
There's only a handful of good Star Wars books, but
right. So I finished the Inferno Squad one before the game came out, and yeah, I wasn't terribly thrilled with the stuff leading up to The Force Awakens in the first. I mean, granted, I didn't read all of it, but what I did read was kind of meh. So I figured I'll just catch up next year sometime, is what I always
always
say.
next year.
But someday it'll come true because someday they'll stop making Star Wars books.
You'll be dead before then.
Shush. Oh, that's a really terrible thought.
Yep.
Not, not living to see
Someone mentioned
the
that when Disney
more
said
Star
they're going
Wars
to
come
start
out.
doing a new Star Wars movie every year. And it's like, someone's like, yeah, you're going to eventually die before seeing an end like a Star Wars story that you're invested in. I was like, oh, that makes me sad. But
Is there a
I just have a
downside to them
weird.
doing trilogies instead of one-offs?
Yeah, that's true. I just have a weird, I don't want to say OCD-ness, but something akin to that when it comes to Star Wars books. I hate not knowing a piece of the lore or so,
Yeah.
especially now that the lore is different than it was before. Like you mentioned, I think, did I mention like just like lightsaber or crystal bleeding like offhand? And you're like, what? And I was like, oh yeah.
Yes, you did. And I was like, what are you talking
Yeah.
about?
And so, like, there's just so many things like that, and so many things just, they do a really good job of world building and then hinting as to, where the story's going to go in the future or everything like that. And even though the single stories might be so-so to great good, it's that world building and lore that I just love sinking my teeth into.
Yeah.
Along with all the great stories,
I'm
obviously.
definitely interested in catching up. It's just I've been burned a couple times now with the I don't want to I don't feel like it's a waste of time, but it's definitely not like the best use of my time always.
Yeah. It's obviously a lot
And
easier if you go just do it on release versus the mountain of catch up you have to do.
right, and that's the other problem is that like the longer it goes, the harder it is for me to catch up because there's new comics every week, there's new books every other month or so, and I don't always read a book every month, and so it's like I would not be surprised if it takes me the rest of the year to read the rest of Oathbringer just because I only read an hour or two a day.
Yeah.
So
It
most
took
days anyway.
me over a year to get through all the current Game of Thrones books. And that's with listening to them a lot.
Maybe my trip back to Kansas City will give me another like 12 hours worth, but or 16 hours chunk out of there if I listen to it the whole time.
You can hit one or two books with that.
Yeah, I actually, well, not Oathbringer,
Yeah.
but I drove back and actually got about 6 hours worth, which was really good. And I was surprised at how much it kept me awake too, because sometimes podcasts and other things make me sleepy.
Yeah.
So engaging that it kept me awake the whole time I was driving. So,
Very nice. All right,
yeah,
well, let's move on to
quote
the.
unquote watching.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sorry.
I did the same thing when I talked about the Star Wars books. But let's move on to the meat of the podcast here. We're going to talk about first about the cost of a game versus the number of hours you've played. Trent, do you feel this is a good way to measure the value of a game, or do you think a game inherently has more value depending on how many hours, or other than how many hours you spend playing it?
I mean, it's a measure. I don't think it's the definitive measure.
Yeah.
It just depends on, to me. I mean, obviously, if you get 200 to 300 hours out of a video game, I mean, yeah, that is a fantastic measurement. But I mean, we talked recently about a game that I played for like 4 to 6 hours, which was Heavy Rain, and it's one of my favorite games of all time. And it was super short and full priced. And so, like, to me, video games are a form of art, and consuming them is always going to be subjective. So if you feel like you got your money's worth, then you did. And if you feel like you didn't, then you didn't. And no one can really tell you one way or another, at least in my opinion, just based on the hours of gameplay. I mean, I tend to like a lot of games that are very hour rich, like, you know, 4X games, RTSs,
And I'm the exact opposite.
MMOs, things like that. Right. Like, you love games that are, you know, 8 to 12 hours long, have a nice compact story to tell, kind of like an in-depth movie. And I like some of those too, like Mass Effect especially. Dragon Age are really good examples of
I like some of
things
yours
like that,
too.
but
Obviously, I'm sinking way more hours in Destiny 2 right now than I thought I would.
what do you think?
I agree with you completely. One reason that kind of brought it to mind recently is people talking about a lot of games having a lot of padding in them to ensure that people feel like they get their money's worth. So imagine like a standard like open world game, one that has, for lack of a better word, like chores for you to do. Just like little tiny fetch quests that mean nothing, you know, go here, just kill this guy, and ooh, congratulations, you complete a quest, and things like that. Some of them have a lot of depth and fun to them. A lot of them feel like a grind. And so the reason why they put those quote unquote not fun grindy content into their games is to pad out the game to give it a little bit more length so they could have a metaphorical box quote to say, like, this game takes 30 hours to beat. Where in my opinion, it ends up hurting the game because it forces me to go through things that I may not particularly want to do or have to do in order to artificially make a game longer than it should be to tell its story or give you the experience that the game wants you to give. And I feel it's whether it's real or not is up for debate, but I feel it's kind of been a detriment on game design for people who use that number alone to determine a value of a game. And so that's why I
Well,
think
for
you hit
me,
the
it's
nail on
like
the head by saying, you know, you could have a 6 hour game that's, you know, totally worth it and have the exact opposite and be equally worth it. And go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, like, to me, like, I remember when aspects like that used to be like considered extra and like achievement fodder rather than anything like core. Like, you always say, like, you know, it's this many hours to beat the game, this many hours to 100%. And I think that's fine, but like, I'll be honest, like, I've thought about going back and playing through all of the Assassin's Creed games, but I know that they do this a lot, and like, I'm not collecting all those damn feathers. Like, there's just no way that's happening.
Well, the feathers are an extra, collectible, kind of what you said, but a lot of aspects of Assassin's Creed games are you get to a point in the story, and then it's like, okay, go do six random side quests of your choosing to unlock the next story mission. And so that's where you're like, I don't want to do this random BS, you know?
That's
Just let
really
me.
lazy. Like, if you can't even make it feel like part of the real story, then that's pretty sad. Like, do they even like disguise it, be like, we need to like rouse the rebellion, blah blah blah, go help these people?
Some Assassin's Creed games do better than the others. But specifically the first one I remember, it was like a little thing in your menu that says complete five more side quests, whatever their equivalent was in the original Assassin's Creed games. So they've done a little bit better in disguising it, but
yeah,
and some of them don't have it at all to give the Assassin's Creed credit. I don't want to just pick on it, but you know, some of them just have all the story missions, you know, just available to you right there. But some of them, if not most of them, are guilty of of having an artificial roadblock until you just run and do more chores for them, so to speak.
I mean, I get why they want to put it in, and for some people, I mean, some people live for, you know, finding every little tiny thing and doing every single little bit possible. But I don't know. I remember the first time, because like they're a Bethesda, who I really like, has the Radiant Quest system that they put into Skyrim and then Fallout 4. But you don't always know for sure which quest givers are the ones that are giving you these Radiant Quests that can infinitely generate.
Yep, that was my mistake in Fallout 4.
Yeah, like I went back to this one guy that you find really early on for the Brotherhood, and I did like 20 quests for him, I swear. And I'm like, man, is this guy ever going to run out of quests? And then I realized, no, he's literally just – and it's kind of cool because they do a really good job hiding it. They're like, hey, we have this piece of tech that's randomly in this like house, and there's ghouls there. But what you don't know is that they randomly rolled the monster type, the location, and where the thing is in the house.
Yeah,
and it just like auto generates all of that, but then they, I don't. I mean, it doesn't bother me as long as I just wish I knew that it was happening at the time.
Yeah,
because there are things in like in Fallout, for example, if you want to spend time grinding extra levels, like if you feel like you're behind, or if you want a certain perk before you go do something else, it's nice to know you can go back to those and do some simple easy quests. But I feel like Assassin's Creed is different because you don't really level up or gain like a lot of new abilities in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a complicated subject for sure.
It is. And as someone who loves, you know, the shorter single player experiences, it makes me sad when that is perceived to be the truth, and that the cost of the game equals, or the value of a game equals the number of hours. Because I see just all the time people like, oh, that game is 8 hours long and no multiplayer. Not worth it. Period. You know, that's just the end. And so I think that is one of the possible reasons why a lot of single player games are struggling these days, because people look at that perceived value and be like, no, this game is not worth $60. But you know, how many people have not experienced Heavy Rain because of, you know, a predetermined judgment like that?
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, it's just kind of a view of our society in general. Like, we all want as much bang for our buck as possible. So if you can play a game for 500 hours, you know, you're going to feel really good about that one purchase. And especially if you're a gamer who has a really tight budget, like, and you have to really choose which games you're going to play. You know, if you only buy one game a month and you beat their first game in the first week you have it, like, you have no new game for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
But at the same time, like, I wish, like, I feel like you can add without making it feel like padding.
Yeah, some games do that really, really well. Like, right, the original Mass Effect trilogy.
I think that's something that they need to focus on. Like, you know, yeah, you can go to all the different planets and explore and do all this different stuff that you did and I didn't. It makes for two different awesome experiences.
Well, I don't even know if you know this, but for me, a typical Mass Effect 100% playthrough is about 20 hours. And a typical Mass Effect 2 and 3 100% playthrough are 40-ish hours each.
Wow.
So even Mass Effect 2 had significantly more content than Mass Effect 1, and it was all significantly more rich in gameplay and storytelling. Yeah. True. Versus just going to random generated planet, pick up random Turian insignia collectible on said planet and then move on, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's actually probably one of the biggest disappointments in Andromeda, not to go back to that, but it's just the
It was open world game syndrome with just padding.
Right. Yeah. And you're driving around. Like, it got to the point, like, I remember at the very beginning in the thing, I forget what it's called, and you come across an enemy camp, and you're like, oh man, like, get out, let's fight these guys, and blah, blah, blah. And by the end of it, you're just like driving past everyone, like, not giving an F. You're just like, enemies everywhere, don't care.
Yeah, just take me to my objective.
Drive to my next.
Then you had those like terrible quests in Andromeda that didn't even like mark on your map where it was. You literally had to like drive around and find something with no indicator where it was.
Yep.
You couldn't even look online for a guide because it could be one of random like 15 like terminals on the planet that would like do your objective.
See, this is where I think Dragon Age is better, because remember in each map there were you would find like a painting of like a cave or a temple of some kind, and you had no idea where it was, but if you found it there would be a treasure inside.
Yep.
And I think that's really cool, because there's one per map, there's clues you can find, and if all else fails, you can go online and find out where it is.
Mario Odyssey has that. Have you seen like the little paintings you can take a snapshot of, and it shows you like where a moon is on another level that you would have no idea
had not noticed that, no.
I don't know if you've even seen one yet, but there's really just like cool. A random like picture you could see, and when you look at it, the Switch tells you to take a screenshot with like the screenshot button so you can look at it later and then try to find where that hidden moon is based on the art you're looking at. So very, very fun. There's maybe about 10, 15 of them, I think, in the whole game. So most of them kind of more on the end game side. Well, all right.
That's really cool.
Yeah, if you don't have anything else to say on that, let's go ahead and switch gears over to Disney being in talks with Fox to purchase them. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing?
Disney's taking over the world.
Yeah, pretty much. What does that mean for the franchises that Fox owns if they were acquired by Disney? So let's start with the beginning. You know, just
franchise, go ahead. Right?
What was that?
This is X-Men, right?
Oh, it's including X-Men, but Disney wants to buy all of Fox.
Well, no, I know. I'm just saying that, like, for me, like, this is the most important part, would be that X-Men could come into the
Yeah.
So on that level, like, it makes me really excited, because I freaking love the X-Men, and like Storm and Wolverine belong in the Avengers, at least, if not more. And like, we can finally get rid of the stupid Inhumans, because boo.
And besides Deadpool, like, X-Men is just ready to be rebooted into the Marvel Universe.
Yep, I could not agree more. They need the Spider-Man Homecoming treatment badly.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
So yeah, that would mean Wolverine. Everything X-Men.
It's time to recast everyone.
Yeah, everything X-Men, everything Fantastic Four, including Silver Surfer and Galactus, one of the biggest Marvel villains out there. Doctor Doom, another one of the biggest Marvel villains, would be back under the Marvel fold.
Oh yeah, and the Fantastic Four could join the Avengers too, which like Mr. Fantastic especially really was a part of.
Yeah, totally.
Ah, so many. They could redo the Civil War series correctly.
Nah, we'll see. But
I mean, they're not going to.
You know, just other things that a whole lot of people think about is Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, the original Star Wars movie, is permanently owned by 20th Century Fox. You know, Disney owns Lucasfilm. They will acquire the rights to the other five Star Wars movies in 2020, I believe. Fox inevitably owns Star Wars, the 1977 original, permanently. And so Disney may want to do that just to make sure they have all the movies under one umbrella.
I can see that.
Weird rights issues between like Blu-ray releases or anything like that being a lot more solid than they currently are. Another big one I thought of, or not I thought of, but I saw someone else mention, you know, Disney has put a large financial stake in the Avatar franchise by building a giant section of Disney World to be Avatar themed. And Fox owns Avatar, and so if they were to purchase Fox, Avatar would then become a official Disney property.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of things that could happen with an acquisition of Fox.
Not to mention, I know this isn't really a huge deal for us, but Disney owns ESPN already, right?
Yep.
And one of the big competitors is like Fox Sports.
Yep. Then don't forget the normal Fox broadcasting channel with ABC.
Right, Right, Channel 4. I'm sorry, whatever your local
Yeah.
affiliate number is. Like, yeah, Fox Network and ABC would be owned by the same parent company.
The Simpsons would
Would
become
they
a Disney
combine, you think?
project.
Does that mean Lisa's a Disney princess?
I guess. I don't know. I mean,
That's
you
funny.
never know. I mean, when you get done watching a Marvel property on Netflix, it still says an ABC Studios production, at the end of it, even though it's not on ABC.
Well, yeah, for now.
Yeah, it's true. But, and think of the streaming service of everything that they could offer as far as a streaming service then. All the movies in 20th Century Fox's portfolio, all the Fox-owned television shows, if they didn't have previous or other, deals.
Yeah, it would be. So, who would be the big major players left? Would it be Warner Brothers, obviously?
Warner Brothers, Universal.
Paramount,
Yeah.
Universal. I feel like Paramount's in trouble already.
Yeah. Sony.
Although, doesn't Paramount owns CBS, right?
I think so, yeah.
So yeah, because they've always had the Star Trek rights. So yeah, in terms of TV, Paramount and CBS are still big for network anyway. Does anyone own HBO, or are they their own thing?
Comcast owns HBO. And Comcast is Universal.
Oh, of course it is. Oh, everything's just owned by everyone. But yeah, so like the big three would be Warner Brothers, Disney, and Universal, right?
Yeah.
For the most part.
I
But
think so, yeah.
that's, man. Yeah, Fox would be a really big pickup.
But that's kind of where I was going to go next.
Because
Like,
I mean,
is this a good thing to have these ginormous companies consolidate into one? Are we getting too close to a monopoly? But then again, is it a true monopoly? Let's just say theoretically that Disney owned all these big studios. That doesn't mean they would own every movie, and then people would still determine if they wanted to go see a movie in the box office or not. If movie A was good enough review wise or good enough to go see on their own,
right. I think it would. I think it makes it harder for any new big studios to pop up because any that are successful are just going to be gobbled up like Pixar. But at the same time, like Disney's proven that they're really good at managing these their affiliate companies, and so it's hard not to want to be like, yes, please take my. Make it good.
Yep. So I did pull up a list here of all the major media conglomerates. We have Comcast, 20th Century Fox, Walt Disney Corporation, Time Warner, and Sony.
Okay.
And National Amusements, which is the parent company of Paramount and CBS.
See, my bigger complaint beyond, like, I really don't have a huge problem with media producing companies buying up other media producing companies. The thing that's already happened that makes me mad is that my ISP, companies are buying up media producing companies. I
Yeah.
think that's a huge conflict of interest and is the reason that we're having net neutrality fights every freaking year.
Yeah.
And that's a
If we
whole,
start talking about that, this would be a 10-hour
right?
long podcast.
That is a whole box of like a whole can of worms in and of itself, but it's like I don't have a huge problem with it. I think there's enough players still that it's competitive, and I think that Disney does a really good job of letting their properties for the most part still be independent. Like I feel that Lucasfilm is still a very different company than Marvel,
Oh
even
yeah,
though they're both
totally.
Disney owned.
Yeah.
So like that doesn't really bother me that much. And it's like you said, like if the movies are good, then people will go see them, and that's ultimately the kind of the marker that it'll go by. And
Yeah.
if they suck, then those projects will die and they'll either the companies will fold. I mean, it's possible that Disney could be toppled if they started making crap, and I think that's easily something
Well, just remember,
that could
80s
happen, but it's not
Disney,
likely to
but
happen.
you know, Disney before, I think, was it Little Mermaid that kind of re-kicked off the, you know, the good Disney era.
Oh, yeah.
Even Disney in the late 90s, like, remember that that cow movie and Chicken Little? Like, no, like, they weren't good.
Yeah, pretty much everything after Tarzan and then until Frozen? Like, when?
I thought Bolt was really good as far as, you know, just Disney Bolt animation. Was really good.
I didn't know that was a Disney movie, but.
Yeah. And like you said, like, they're each kind of, you know, siloed individually. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of collaboration that goes on, but, you know, I think Disney Animation has surpassed Pixar in the past 5 to 10 years as far as quality.
Yeah, they haven't really done anything that hugely impresses me. I heard Coco's good, but I mean, it's not like, you know, A Bug's Life or Toy Story or
yeah,
anything like that like screams, you know, new, amazing. I'm trying to think of the last new Pixar movie I really, really liked.
The Good Dinosaur.
No idea.
No, I'm just kidding. That was terrible.
Yeah, so...
Cars 3.
There are some... I mean, there's some potential pitfalls. I mean, there's a lot of things I would be really excited about, like, you know, X-Men and Marvel being able to play together again. I don't know, stuff like that.
See, I'm just looking. Inside Out, which was 2015. But before that, the last one I liked was Toy Story 3 in 2010, as far as Pixar.
See, what was Inside Out? Is that the one where the...
That was all the personalities in the little girl's brain. Yeah.
I never saw that.
But after Toy Story 3, there was Cars 2, Brave, which I thought had a lot of potential, but ended up being really bad. Monster University. Up was before Toy Story 3.
Right. I think that's the last one that I really loved.
You don't love Toy Story 3? Oh, I love Toy Story 3.
I do love it. I just don't consider it. I don't always like considering sequels to be like a new iteration of something that they've done really well. Like,
and that's true.
It was good, and it was better than Toy Story 2, and probably better than Toy Story 1, but like, it was just them like taking the same idea and just working it over again.
Yeah. I don't know. You had Monsters University after Brave, and then Inside Out, The Good Dinosaur, Finding Dory, Cars 3, and then Coco.
Yeah.
A lot of kind of meds on there.
Yeah, I think we're still pretty far away from a monopoly. I mean, Disney obviously is the powerhouse right now. But, I mean, as long as they still keep making good things, like, I don't care.
That's the biggest thing. You know, people are naturally concerned about this kind of thing. But, again, like, you have to look at, you know, the quality. Like, people, like, even if someone has a monopoly, people aren't going to go see bad movies, so to speak.
Right. Well, I feel like with creative endeavors, it's a little bit different than like in the past with like steel and oil and things like that. Like there's some comparisons to be made, but like they would go out of their way to force other people out of business completely.
And like, yeah, that would be bad.
Once you have the market on something essential, then you can do whatever you want with it. But like Disney doesn't have the creative market. And even if they did and started churning out or something independent to take them down, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because people aren't going to waste money on something because it's a medium that you don't need. You know, it's a hobby medium and there's no end to other things you can spend your money on. So.
Yeah. Agreed. And just kind of as an aside, before we move on to our last topic here, I wanted to list from newest to oldest the last Disney animation movies. You have Moana, which was amazing. Zootopia, which was amazing. Big Hero 6, which was amazing. Frozen, which was amazing. Wreck-It Ralph, which is amazing.
I haven't seen any of those first three. I need to see those.
Moana, Zootopia, or Big Hero 6? Really?
Yeah, I haven't.
Oh, they are wonderful. They are really, really good.
I know. I've heard so many good things. I just haven't seen them yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, Disney is kicking Pixar's butt pretty handily.
But Pixar just announced the same company. Or just had a teaser trailer for Incredibles 2. So we'll see. I'm excited for that.
Oh, that does make me excited. But it's like the only thing that when it gets weird is like when movies compete by the same owner. Like we're starting to have some weird problems with release dates.
Yeah, especially like this Marvel next coming year.
Right, like Marvel and Lucasfilm don't want to compete with each other, but eventually they're going to have to if they keep making more and more movies.
Well, they're going to next year with Avengers 3 and Han Solo, Star Wars story, being 2 weeks away from each other.
I kind of feel like Solo is being abandoned
really
quietly. Like, shh, what Han Solo movie? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I know we're all like, man, it right now, but I'm sure you and I are both going to start being giddy for it once we see the first trailer.
Oh, of course. I'm going to go see it opening night.
Like, I'm still just like, I don't want this movie, or I want something else other than this movie, please. Rather.
Right. Like, I want. Give me the Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan trilogy, please.
And just put it in December so we have a Star Wars Christmas every year, please.
Yes, thank you. Like, what is this fascination with May? Like, you do so much better in December, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because all the superhero movies are always competing for May and June and July. Like, December is perfect for you. It's when Lord of the Rings came out. It's when the last three Star Wars movies have come out, or including this year anyway.
Yep.
It's like, just take whatever the like December 15th-ish equivalent of is every year and just park on it. Just be like, this is mine forever. Goodbye. Yep.
That's the other thing. Like, the reason they moved is because of Avatar. And again, they have I would argue they have a bigger financial investment into Avatar than Fox does.
That's really funny.
So, yeah. Stupid Avatar ruins everything.
Seriously, like, get out of my Star Wars Avatar. is that coming out this year or is it next year?
Next year, supposedly. I'll believe it if I see it when I see it. So finally, let's get to our Rebels mid-season finale in depth.
Let's actually, sorry to contradict you.
Listener questions.
Listen to our question real quick, since we're doing spoilers stuff next.
Okay.
So we're just going to do one. It's from our good friend Ted, who was a co-host recently. He says, Steam sales, what are you liking about the current Black Friday sales, and what are you hoping goes on sale?
I can answer that.
I had to pop open Steam to take a look around for a little bit. Go ahead.
While you're looking around on Steam, or if you had already, sorry. I actually got away relatively unscathed, because the thing about Steam sales, and not to say they happen super often, because they don't, you know, but they happen often enough.
But they do.
And I kind of own everything. I'll look at a Steam sale, and like, ooh, not everything, obviously, but I'll look at Steam sale, like, ooh, I need that game. It's only I have it already. Okay. It seriously happened five or six times every time a major Steam sale happens. I'll be like, oh, sweet. That's amazing. You know, I need to get that game. Oh, yeah, I have that already. Yeah, especially, you know, considering I was a console gamer who's now moving to PC, I want some of my, you know, console games that I own on console, but I want the Steam version of them, you know, and right. So the Steam sale is perfect to pick that up. So whenever I see, like, something like that, I'm like, I got it already. Dang it. So the only thing I'm ever, like, excited to see are, like, newer games. But even so, like, the sales aren't ever that great on them. They're, like, 20, 30% off. The new games are, like, $40, you know. Yeah. Which you can generally find them for $40 any day, you know, through Green Man Gaming or something like that.
Yeah, one that I would really recommend is Civ 6 is 50% off. So if you skipped the newest Civ generation, now is a good time to jump in.
There you go.
I think Civ 6 is a vast improvement over Civ 5. I know everyone like loves Civ 5, but I think Civ 6 has some amazing improvements.
And then all that, what I said, I did end up purchasing two new VR games. So one's called Pavlov. It's an actual VR online first-person shooter. So we'll see how that goes. Probably not very well. But people say it's the best one, and people make a lot of custom maps. Like, I just saw a Reddit post a week or so ago that someone created Clock Town in Majora's Mask as a map to play.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and there's all sorts of fun maps like that to play that you could download and play with people. So they figured I'd do that. It was only $6, so why not? And then another game called Res Infinite. Res is a very popular or cult fan favorite game that I haven't played before, but I know that people love it, and they made a VR version recently that people who have played the VR version who love the original Res say, like, this is the only way to play this game. So it went on sale, so I went ahead and got it as well. So
nice.
Add to my VR portfolio.
I haven't picked anything up in the sale yet. I know that it's still technically going on. But a lot of the front page stuff, it's like you said, I either already have or it's not quite low enough that I want it. And not to mention, like, I am not struggling for games to play right now.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like GTA 5 should already be lower than it is, but it's not. It's still $30.
And so I know.
I was like, man, if you were like 20 or more, I would buy
it. You say that, but it is literally in the top 10 selling games every month.
I know.
Every single month, because some of my podcasts list off like, oh, last month the top 10 of the selling, and they list what are in Grand Theft Auto 5, if not in the top 3, definitely in the top 5 or 10 every single month since it's come out, you know, no matter what platform.
Nice.
So yeah, they have no reason to drop it down in price when they're still selling, you know, as much as brand new release games every month.
That's fair. I just saw a game called Cat Quest, which is 20% off right now, and you're a little medieval cartoon cat that, like, you have it's an RPG, and I think I'm buying this game.
You would.
It looks so cute. Anyway, but yeah, so that's kind of the big stuff that I've been looking at. City Skylines is 75% off, which is amazing. We don't have that yet. Yeah, it's kind of all. I mean, there are games that if I didn't have anything to play, that I'd probably buy a lot of these. But since I do, I'm not going to yet.
Yeah, just I don't want to say in the old days, because again, I've only been a PC gamer for like 4 years at this point. But it seems like in the 2012, 2013 era, like, Steam sales were not a lot better, but just like a lot crazier and more like special. Where it's like, holy crap, there's a Steam sale. This game is $2. What? Kind of. Moment, whereas it seems like it's all kind of those same games that are on sale for the most part. Now it's like, oh, Skyrim's on sale again, yay.
What, you don't want to buy Skyrim for like the fourth time?
Yeah, I'll buy it in VR though when it comes out on Vive.
So you are gonna buy it, what, three times?
Yes,
I've only done two, 360 and PC.
Me too.
Nice. So yeah, there you go. There you go, Ted. That's our thought on the Steam sale.
So. All right, so we're going to wrap up and getting into our Rebels spoiler cast.
Spoiler alert.
We'll be covering everything Rebels, mostly just the mid-season finale, but, you know, everything leading up to it as well is fair game. So.
Hopefully before the spoilers. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah.
Let's do this. Spoilers. This Rebels season sucks so far.
Yes, it does.
I'm
really sad about it.
I'm very disappointed in it.
Very disappointed.
Yep. So just some thoughts. The wolves, like, stupid. It was kind of cool. We saw them in the trailer. And we know that Dave Filoni, like, loves wolves, but it's really getting, you know, self-pleasing at this point with how mystical and important wolves are. What'd you say?
It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Like, we've had no explanation. They have unexplained force powers. Are they sentient? Are they not sentient?
Are they goats? Are they really there?
Right. Because, they keep appearing and disappearing. Like, can they teleport? Like, there's so much about... Like, I feel like Dave Filoni is playing a little too fast and loose with Star Wars lore at the moment.
Yeah.
But at the same time, not really giving us anything substantial. Like, I just feel like I'm being sprayed with, like, foam, and it's, like, not fun or helpful. It's just annoying.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of Clone Wars arcs, like the Mortis arc and the Yoda arc in the Lost Chapters there, they kind of went into the weird Force territory, but I feel like they were still, like, building to something.
Right.
Yeah, and they had a lot of good payoff moments, and maybe that will happen still. You know, obviously we have a whole half a season left, but as of right now, it's just, I find the wolves annoying, and they've been so like the focus of like three or four episodes at this point. Yeah. And it's just giving us questions with no answers. And it's just frustrating.
Yeah. Like they're not even foreshadowing anything. They're just puzzling.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
And it's almost like you could tell the payoff is not going to be worth it. Like there's absolutely nothing they could do to make us go like, oh, okay, we see what you were trying to do. It's just going to be like just some pretentious BS and then it's going to be done. Kanan's going to die and like become a wolf and be like, oh, that's what they're going for. All right. You know? That's not a spoiler. I'm just, unfortunately, I don't know what's going to happen, but you know.
Yeah.
As far as the finale goes, I feel like we've kind of spent too much time on this Thai base already. You know, it was kind of a big focus in earlier seasons, and then like they were about to go attack it, but then they're like, LOL, JK, Thrawn's here to kill us all. Right. And then, you know, it's only now at the mid-season finale that they're like, okay, let's go attack this, and we failed miserably. And so it's like, we know that this this base is going to be destroyed, right? Go ahead.
Right. Or at least actually is going to be ruined somehow.
Yeah.
Because these don't show up in the movies, mm-hmm. and they would be a big deal if they did. So, like, have the end point where we are now, and the middle doesn't make sense. I'm having a hard time plotting a way out of this that makes sense with the rest of the story, because this is all before Rogue One, and Rogue One is supposed to be their first major victory against the Empire.
Yeah.
Like, as the rebellion, which when they were just their own little, like, cell of, like, pseudo-terrorists, like, you could write off any victory they had as, like, oh, they're not part of the rebellion yet, but now they are.
Yeah.
So any big victory is going to have to be overshadowed by Rogue One, according to the lore, unless they just mess up canon. I don't know.
As much as I love Hera, like I hate this feeling, because you know when you know something's the final season, you kind of tend to be like, okay, like stop with the filler. You have so much story to tell and so little time to tell it. Don't dawdle on this wolf crap and stuff like that. But I also didn't, as much as I love Hera, I didn't need a story of her just like running around being stealthy, like trying to escape her crashed X-Wing, you know?
Right. But at the same time, that was the best part of the season so far, because like it was Hera being a badass.
Yeah, it's true.
So it was really fun to watch, but you're right. It didn't really further the storyline at all. Like, we already knew she was a badass. She just hasn't shown it off in a while.
Yeah. And I've said it before, I really think this season is misusing Thrawn. Whereas he was the big bad of season 3, he didn't end up, you know, dying at the end of the season, so he's still around, he's still a threat, but he's not even like a threat. Doesn't seem like he's even going after the rebels anymore. He's like, oh, the rebels are here, he'll take them, you know, kind of thing.
Well, and it's he's lost his terror that he had last season. Like, he was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little hint of that with the like the random giant Thai squadron backup thing.
Yeah.
I think they're misusing everyone this story, this season. Like, you have to wrap up the storylines of all of the six major players. And then probably even like Kallus. But it's like, how are you going to do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like there's so much, like, yeah, we have to know. I also seem to mention, like, why was Obi-Wan the last hope if these two powerful Jedi were regularly showing up at Yavin?
Yeah,
why, you know, like, where did Hera go? Why is Boba Fett the most, you know, well-known Mandalorian? What happened to the Mandalorians? Do they just disappear for the rest of, like they're just so war-torn that they don't show up in the trilogy?
Boba Fett's not a Mandalorian, technically. He's just wearing Mandalorian armor.
No, I know that. But I'm just like, he's the most in the universe wearing that armor.
Yeah.
Like, no one else ever shows up and be like, hey, like, that's ours. Like, I don't know. And then, like, Zeb apparently is just going to disappear. We know Chopper and Hera live.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It's frustrating.
So, I mean, like, I know they don't need to wrap up everybody's story because a lot of characters' stories will continue in other media. Like, I could definitely see a comic series getting started, or even just Dave Filoni's next show, next cartoon show, being focused on one of those other characters. You know, Star Wars Rebels is ending, but, you know, the adventures of, you know, Zeb and Kallus, you know, could continue. You know, we never know. Yeah. You know, as we know, because so many Clone Wars storylines and characters, you know, just didn't skip a beat besides they, you know, the 15 years between them, but didn't skip a beat and just went right on in into Rebels. And I'm sure the same is going to be otherwise as well. But I felt that that was more of an excuse because they didn't get a chance to finish Clone Wars. It got, you know, canceled mid-storyline. But I feel that since they knew the storyline was ending, you know, let's wrap this up with a complete story and then let these characters continue as Star Wars characters do.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's about all I have to say about it. It's not good. Hopefully they do better by the end. Do you know when it comes back?
Me too. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't know if they've announced that or not. Have you heard anything?
I haven't yet. I'm sure it's, you know, January, February.
Yeah, probably like that somewhere. There's no announced. And we just know it's called Allegiance, but there's no date for it.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I can find yet.
Maybe after Last Jedi, it'll be such a big knowledge bomb dropped on us, and then all the episodes after that will be like, you know, all spoilery for Last Jedi, and it'll be amazing. But we'll see. I don't believe it, but
yeah. I mean, okay, so here's another random question that doesn't really have to do with Rebels necessarily. When do you think they're going to let the book writers, comic writers, video game writers, cartoons, whatever, really have at it with the time between 6 and 7?
Do you think it's going to be after episode 9? No, I think it's going to be after Last Jedi, honestly. Because, again, if we look to the original trilogy as... Yeah, I think if we look like the original trilogy is inspiration, that all the big reveals are going to be in episode 8, in my opinion, because I think any, yeah, but even so, that one was treated really small in the movie itself, even though its consequences were large. And there'll be some of those in 9 as well, but I think any major plot twists or revelations will disvalue the final act of this trilogy. You know, this trilogy, the final act typically has to be about the here and now and the consequences of what these characters are going through at the moment. Not being like, oh, by the way, Rey, this is your mom, you know, at the end, you know, which reveals that Rey's mom all along was Obi-Wan's daughter, you know, something like that. You know,
it
takes away from the consequences of the characters at that moment. So any big lasting secrets they want to keep secret of as far as the events between them goes, I think are going to be revealed in episode 8 and then further supplemented by supplemental material. Maybe not full blast, but I would say like 90-95% blast as far as, you know, like, here's the story of Kylo Ren when he was Luke's student, you know, kind of stories. So,
yeah. And that's what I'm hoping for. Because I feel like we've had a good amount of world building. Like, I want some meat aside from the movies.
Yeah. So I think the floodgates will be opened, but then with allowing for a little bit of wiggle room for some stuff in episode 9, which will then, you know, it's all open. Have at it.
Gotcha.
So
cool. I agree.
And I've listened to a lot of interviews and been in panels with a lot of authors, and they don't get any news before the movies. Like, they don't get an outline like, hey, this is what happens in Force Awakens. So when you write this, they write a story and the story group says like, hey, instead of having this droid be this, name the droid this so it connects with the movie, you know, something like that. Or the story group would just go to them and say like, hey, there's this one side character in the cantina in episode 7, just write a short story about her. She's a bounty hunter. She's kind of badass, you know, do what you want with her. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
So, sometimes they take from the books as well. Like for Claudia Gray when she wrote Lost Stars. You know, they didn't give her any information about Force Awakens at all. They did just tell her, like, hey, just so you know, like, the Empire has a big battle, their last battle at a planet called Jakku. It's a desert planet. That's pretty much all they gave her. And then when she has and she wrote that crashed Star Destroyer moment, you know, in the book, and the story group liked it so much that that's why they included that, like, crashed Star Destroyer in the background in that scene when Rey is riding back to the town. And so, like, Claudia Gray, she said, like, she saw the trailer and then, like, freaked out because, like, that was, like, her Star Destroyer, you know?
Yeah.
That they decided to implement just as a bonus into the movie. Same thing with, like, Chopper and the ghost being shown in Rogue One. Like, it wasn't originally planned, you know, at the beginning. It was literally just like, hey, like, let's throw this into this scene, you know, as an Easter egg.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the floodgates will be open this December, next month, which is why I think one of the reasons why we don't have a whole lot of books coming out. We have the novelization coming out of Last Jedi in March or April, and then we have the Thrawn novel in June, and nothing else. Because I think, like, all the authors are sitting there waiting for this movie,
yeah,
metaphorically. And then, like, they'll get the information, and then Lucasfilm will be like, okay, go. And then everyone will start writing the stories based off this new information. So that's my theory, anyways.
Sweet. I agree. I'm excited.
Just a few weeks away, like 3 weeks.
It's very true. Alrighty. Does that do it for us, you think?
Yeah, take us away.
Woohoo! Thanks again, everybody, for joining us for the 51st episode. I don't know why we're counting this one again, but we'll probably stop that in the future. But thanks for joining us again this week. And reach out to us on social media and email and our website, briefnerdy.com, and let us know what you want us to talk about, and we'll work your topics and questions into the show. And see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Take care.